Grade 7 Conference, Lecture 5, The Astral Body. So now we come to the body which is most evident, most explosive, most troublesome, and yet without which we would not have the foundation for independent thinking and personal freedom. It's just because of all of the antipathetic forces that the astral body brings that we have the possibility of choosing not to go that way. And of course, this is the very beginning of that path in life that's experienced by the adolescent, the beginning of sixth and seventh grade. Now, if I may repeat something that I brought very strongly in earlier conferences, because alas, you're not going to hear it from anyone else, and I think it really is important, that with the astral body and all of its fireworks comes something that's very substantial, which is the following. Remember, I mentioned in the life between death and rebirth that it's the astral body which, of all of the bodies, has the greatest and hardest lessons to learn, because it's the astral body that really colors our human relationships and our relationships with the world of nature, our relationships with God and the spiritual world. All of those relationships are centered in our experience of our astral body. Therefore, it's the astral body that carries the greatest impulse for karmic change and karmic fulfillment. You know, it learns in the spiritual world the terrible consequences of feelings and thoughts that are not in harmony with the spiritual world. And in the spiritual world, at that time, free of bodily connections, the astral body is eager to make amends for that. Things change when it comes back into a physical world and a physical body, and it tends to forget its good intentions, but nonetheless, they are there. Which is to say, in another way, the astral body is the vehicle of our personal individual karma. Until we have an astral body that is living within us, that is firmly anchored within us, which starts to come round about the middle of sixth grade, for, you know, the great majority of children, somewhere between the middle of sixth and the middle of seventh, you're going to find this astral anchoring, this astral incorporation. With that, for the first time, comes the child's own karma. What about before that? It's been the karma of the parents. The parents have been the vehicle, as it were, and literally their vehicle is what brings the child to school every day and now and then picks them up on time as well. This is really important. It's such an obvious thing. It would be like saying, you know, when the child is in the mother's womb, oh, what a cute child you have. Oh, looks just like the dad or whatever. It's not born yet. You know, it's there. It exists for sure. Same thing with the child's individual personal karma. It does not exist yet. It is not born yet. It is in the womb of the mother particularly, but the father to some extent. Or we might say that the mother carries that, and it's the father who helps to be like the midwife, the pediatrician, who delivers that karma. That's why at this age, the connection with the father is very important. We'll talk more about this under the rubric of working with parents. But anyway, now the child becomes aware, however dreamily or in however subterranean a way, they have a sense that things are changing and they have to find their own direction in life. And this is another aspect of the saying no and get away, don't touch me, you're all weird, I hate it here, whatever. This is an inarticulate voice trying to express almost the most important thing that can happen in a human life, that you start to realize who you are, why you're here, and what you've got to start doing. And it all kind of comes at once. It can come in the twinkling of an eye. It can come over several weeks or months. Some children certainly are more asleep to this, and they're not going through the birth pangs of adolescence in such a dramatic way. On the whole, girls experience it much sooner than boys. I would say a 6 to 7 year gap can be there. For the boy, this experience often does not come until 11th grade. And out of regard for this, two works of literature that are deeply taken up in the Waldorf High School in 11th grade are Dante's Divine Comedy, particularly the Inferno, and Wolfram von Eschenbach's Great Parsifal. Two stories, particularly Parsifal, about boys and the stupid things they do and their dullness about who and what they are and their slow but powerful awakening to their destiny and who they are meant to be and what they are meant to do. So this is incredibly important. And in a certain way, you know, with every no and every battle and every protest and so on, we should be inwardly on our knees, worshipfully seeing that karma is working, that karma is about to unfold, that this young person is going to stand on her own two feet and move forward in the world the way she is supposed to move. And as I've said more often than not, and I say this in many schools, this is one of the primary reasons that in 6th grade, 7th and 8th grade, so many children leave a class. It's not necessarily because the teacher doesn't know what he or she is doing, and it could very well be that you're stepping into a 7th grade because, as happens in so many schools, the 6th grade teacher was fired at the end of 6th grade because her class lost so many children because the parents were up in arms or whatever, and now you've stepped in to save the day. And it could be actually that she was actually a very good teacher and that the children awoke right on time, right in the timetable, and they knew then that she was not meant to be their teacher anymore, that they did not have personal karma with her. Their parents had karma with her, and that's been beautifully worked out over the years through all those parent evenings and telephone calls and whatever. And now that's done. Fine. They're ready to move on to another teacher, another school. That's okay. It would also be okay and even great if the door was opening and a lot of new kids were coming into the class who did feel that connection with the new 6th or 7th grade teacher in the Waldorf school. See, this is why it's really not good to have just one Waldorf school in a place, in a city or a town or, you know, within 10,000 miles or whatever. Waldorf schools should not be monopolies. There should be several, and this will make it easy for children to migrate from one school to another. It's not the end of the world if they do that. And actually, if there are enough Waldorf schools, there'll be, you know, the migration will kind of balance out. It will be a, you know, win-win, zero-sum, whatever you want to call it, game, in which the children will all be finding their right teacher. So this is a huge issue in the Waldorf movement right now, the incredible attrition rate of children at this age, and no less tragically, the attrition rate of teachers, many of whom are losing their jobs for no good reason whatsoever, except the business office is freaking out over the loss of children. And it may not be entirely because they're not doing well. So this is very important for us to realize that children, you know, somewhere between mid-sixth And the end of eighth grade, you know, even taking those children who lag behind a bit, karma is awakening. Karma is unfolding. And the children are starting to have an inkling even of their ego, which lies deep, deep, hidden away within the folds of their astral body. So that's a very important aspect of this. Now let's look at this from another perspective. We are born with 100% of our physical body present. The etheric body gives that physical body life, but only a relatively small percentage, small proportion of that etheric body is actually incorporated in the physical body when we are born. A great deal of it, by far most of it, 95%, let's say, is still in its primal home in the sphere of the moon. That is to say, it's filling up the complete distance between the orbit of the moon and the Earth. So this is why when you hold a baby, when you walk into a baby's nursery, you feel something very different. You feel something that transcends that little physical entity that you have in your arms or that you see across the room in its cradle. However, the etheric body is rushing to incorporate, so that by the time we are 7 years old, 8 years old, it is already accomplished a great deal of its work in organizing the physical body and can be given up. It can transform its task to the sustenance of memory rather than simply sustaining the physical body. And then by fifth grade, around age 11, the etheric body is as incorporated into our physical body as it will ever be. And this is where we get this sense of balance, this Grecian quality of the fifth grader. So it's about 95% present. How is it accomplished this? By traveling at about the speed of sound towards our physical body, which is 750 miles an hour. Sonic boom occurs after that point. And now and then I think you can feel a child's etheric body creates a little bit of a sonic boom within them. But it's on the whole a gentle movement, a speed that the physical body can accept of that incorporation of the etheric body. The astral body is a different issue. It too is barely present when we are born. Only enough of it is there so that we can express our needs and we can experience our needs. Only enough is there so that our life can be sustained and those around us can be alerted to give us the care that we need. And this has a great deal to do, especially with the sense of touch. The astral body is very connected at this age with our tactile sense and with the need to be held and the need to experience the warmth of the mother in particular, but of all other adults and caretakers around us. The astral body is also moving towards a complete incorporation. It's perhaps 0.5% incorporated in the physical etheric organization of the newborn child, but it is rushing to be more fully incorporated by the time we come to puberty and adolescence. In fact, the state of being pubescent, the state of being adolescent, means that the astral body is much more fully incorporated than it had been in earlier stages of our life. never will that astral body be more than 50% incorporated. But by the time we are 12, 13, 14, it's, let's say, approaching 40%, 42%, something in that light. It won't be until we come into young adulthood, in fact, even into our late 20s, that the astral body reaches its maximum level of incorporation, 50%. This is why it helps us be a social being and alerts others around us to our hierarchy of needs, as some school of psychology will describe them. So the astral body is moving even faster than the etheric because the astral body's home is, as its name implies, the starry world. The astral body really comes from the furthest realm beyond the planets. Moving at the speed of sound, it would take much longer than one human lifetime to incorporate. So it has to move at approximately the speed of light, 186,000 miles per second. It's moving much, much more rapidly. So when it hits, when it comes in for a final landing, no matter how much it puts on the brakes, it hits us hard. It knocks us over. It blows us away, however we might want to describe that. And we can feel the effect ourselves, and the effect can sometimes be made manifest to those around us. And I would say you've already been seeing this in your grade 6 students, and you're going to continue seeing it throughout 7th grade and much of 8th grade. And in fact, Steiner had said that one of the few antidotes to this powerful invasion of our own astral body, yet it comes at us and into us like a foreign body, the one way of counterbalancing, of healing this, is the experience of the arts. So what a perfect year to learn about one of the great flowering of the arts phases of all human existence, and that is to say, the period of the Renaissance. And seeing how Renaissance artists looked at the human body. We say the physical body, but they're actually looking at far more than that, including the astral body. So this is very important. The astral body, with its sympathies and antipathies, its joys and hates, its ups and downs, this is now moving with the speed of light, coming in more and more powerfully into the life of the young person. And this is a big period of adjustment for the child, for the child's parents, and for the child's teacher as well, to deal with this newly burgeoning astral body. From time immemorial, it was recognized that the astral body is related to the animal world, and that by virtue of carrying an astral body, we carry animal forces, animal qualities within us. And therefore, if we are able to meet or overcome or tame or train animals outside of us, it also reflects on the mastery of our own astral forces. So it shouldn't surprise us that it's around this time of puberty and adolescence that there will be one or more girls in the class who suddenly get passionate about becoming equestrians and work all day cleaning out the stables and riding their horses and taking part in various competitions and so on. For many of them, this is a phase, and it will pass very often as soon as the dating age begins, which for Waldorf students tends to be later rather than earlier. But for others, it will become a lifelong matter.
And we could see then in the Renaissance art we're going to study how frequently the equestrian statue comes up, or the artist depicting a horse, often depicting horses so well in his art that kings and dukes would ask artists to come to the horse trades with them so that they could find the highest quality of a riding horse for that individual. So the depiction of animals and the animal world in the Renaissance will also be of great interest to students, and to help students be able to delineate artists and delineate their depiction of animals well will be an important task to set before the students. And perhaps if you go this far, even more in the sculptural realm, let's say. So the relationship of the human being and the animal, and also the astral body, was recognized in its catabolic nature, meaning that it is the astral body above all which brings forces of destruction, forces of illness to the human being, at the battle between the healing forces of the etheric and the illness-bringing maleficent forces which are inherent and necessary in the nature of the astral body. The conflict between these two can often lead to health issues coming up at this age, and not only physical health, but actually emotional health as well. So this can be an age in which you see sudden, profound psychological changes occurring. Here again, like the equestrian passion, it can be a phase. It does not mean necessarily that you suddenly have somebody who's deeply disturbed. It doesn't mean that this is somebody who needs to be taking one or another remedy for depression, or for manic depression or borderline issues or whatever. But it's something to be awake to and aware of, that there are powerful changes that can suddenly appear in even seemingly the most balanced of students. And with the astral's catabolic quality, that which destroys the foodstuffs that we take in so that we can digest them, if this catabolic nature asserts itself too strongly, then we also can see the onset of eating disorders. So here again, the astral body lies at the root of much that can really be a riddle or even a major issue in the life of our classroom. And it's good for you as a teacher to try to penetrate the various things that Steiner said about the astral body, where, just about everywhere, that he describes human growth and development or the nature of the human being, the astral body will come up. This is a good time, if you haven't done so already, to really look at Steiner's indications, Steiner's thoughts, Steiner's warnings about the power of the astral body at this stage of human development. And we'll come back to this. It's not something I just mention and leave, but rather we'll see again and again how the seventh grade curriculum fits this onset of astrality like a glove fits a hand. And now we'll go on to look at the nature of the ego, which also plays a role in the life of the seventh grader.